Show.
It's the show you've all been waiting for. Until now. Until literally right now.
Now!
Literally right now. Literally. Now your host, Eric Metaxas.
I wonder if Todd Wilkerson knows that he's obnoxious. In this hour, we're going to have the second part of my conversation with David Bahnsen, the genius financial guru economist who's affiliated with the King's College across the street. Very exciting, always, to talk to David Bahnsen. Hey there, folks. That's Boz Skaggs. The young people are just crying out for more Boz Skaggs. We're trying to reach that demographic. I continue my conversation today with David Bahnsen. David is on the board of the King's College here in New York City. He is the author of Crisis of Responsibility, Our Cultural Addiction to Blame and How You Can Cure It. He is a financial advisor, top advisor in the country. We have him right here in the studio, which is wonderful. David, thanks for being willing to come by.
Yes, sir.
I want to talk to you about the morality of markets. It's something you've talked about and written about. It's something that I take very seriously because I think that what I have seen among my conservative friends, a lot of conservative friends who don't have a faith background, seem to think that the market, that the free market is some panacea, and that if we sprinkle free market someplace, shazam, everybody's going to start wearing tricorn hats, carrying muskets, and you know, saying, give me liberty or give me death. The same thing with naive neocons under Bush the Second. They think that if we just sprinkle democracy and give people the ability to vote, next thing you know, they're going to be self-governing, just like we were in 1787. And I know that that's nonsense. In my book, If You Can Keep It, I talk about that there's a link that is unavoidable between virtue and self-government, between virtue and, you know, a free market that's a real free market. Where do you – I mean, it seems to me that this is something that has crept into the culture, and you write about that, that we've become addicted to blame, and something has happened where we've ceased to see the link between virtue and faith and these things that are important. So I guess what I always say is that the free market will deliver better pornography and better drugs if that's what people want. It's amoral. It will only give us what we want. So if we want good things, it will give us good things. It'll give us better work environments and whatever. But there's some people that they don't care. They care about the bottom line. So if their workers are miserable, they don't care as long as they're their stock prices are going up or so on. You know, there's a moral link, and you talk about that.
But see, I don't believe that anyone who cares about, and this is why I got to push back on that distinction. If someone only cares about the bottom line, then they have to care how they treat their workers in a real free market, or they will lose their workers. See, I think that ultimately I deeply agree with you that the market must be rooted and driven by the right anthropology, meaning an understanding of man, the human person, understanding his relationship with God. Genesis 1 is my foundational economic textbook, and then I do a whole lot of reading from there. But Genesis 1 starts with God asking man, created in dignity, this is pre-fall, to go steward the earth, to grow it, to cultivate it. I believe it was a pro-growth agenda from Genesis 1, verse 26. However, I do not really believe that I am most effective merely talking to the progressive, socialistic collectivists that are right now doing great damage to free markets. I have to talk to the Gordon Gekko crowd, the Ayn Randian crowd that is so popular at college campuses.
And by the way, that's where I started this conversation.
Yes.
In other words, it's those conservative friends that I have who seem to think, like Gordon Gekko and Ayn Rand, that the market itself, it's this magic thing, that it doesn't have to have any connection to virtue. It is virtue.
Well, and the market, I'm fond of the line, much like you and I are both married men, I believe that marriage civilizes men. I believe that the market civilizes some of the worst instincts of entrepreneurs and businessmen and folks operating in self-interest. The only thing I'm pushing back on is acting as if the pursuit of bottom line is somehow the actual enemy. in reality, a pursuit of bottom line is intrinsically part of the entire mission.
But that's only if you're really wise. In other words, if you're – I mean, it's just like this. Let's say I go into a store and there's – that store has been there since I was a little kid. And whenever I come in there, the man gives me a slice of bologna. My mother comes back. They have a relationship. And they know that giving away that slice of bologna is part of a relationship. They're not losing. They're gaining, right?
Sure.
Because they're creating relationships and trust. That's what makes the world go round. If I go to a Costco or someplace else where I don't know anybody, it's just a big box store, there's no relationship. And therefore, they are there to bring things down. So if you can get it 10 cents cheaper there than you do at the local store, people start getting sucked over to whether it's the Costco, whatever it is.
Yep.
And what I'm saying is that the bottom line is not the only thing. And actually, if you really are concerned with the bottom line, you value relationships. You value local relationships. You value how you treat your customers. You value how you treat your employees, because word gets out. People want to work with you. They want to work hard for you because you reward them for working for you. So it does go beyond the bottom line. But then ironically, the bottom line improves when you take care of those things.
And so at the end of the day, we're saying the same thing. The person who is most driven by economic growth, by success, by human flourishing, will, A, makes wise business decisions,
right,
which sometimes do involve cost cutting. It involves sometimes laying off workforce. It involves an ugly side to markets, if you will. But it also involves those things where you say, I'm giving out the bologna because it builds rapport. There's a relationship element. I'm very fond of Ludwig von Mises' framework in looking at markets as human action. Okay, I don't believe that anybody is really bottom line driven if they're ignoring human actions. We're feeding a whole ecosystem, if I can get as many economic cliches in here at once. The invisible hand that Adam Smith writes about involves the relational aspect and the kind of mathematical aspect, right, of making business decisions. But I resist both the left and the right when they pit these things against each other. I don't think that that is necessary. And in fact, I think a virtuous market, I really don't use the word capitalism much anymore. It was Father Sirico at the Acton Institute who's kind of shamed me into using that term. I talk about the free and virtuous society. I think it's sustainable. I think it is the birthright of post-Enlightenment Western markets and democracy. And yet the fact of the matter is markets are not the great evil. It is when bad people that are not being restrained that things can get out of control and there are excesses that will creep in. The problem is with every bad aspect of markets someone wants to come down on, they diagnose a worse solution.
Right.
That's what I'm very resistant
to. Well, that's right. And the reason I always vote Republican is because I care about the poor. In other words, I know that when you insist, when the government insists on you've got to hire the minimum wage to this, and you've got to do this, and you've got to have these regulations, you are harming the poor. You are harming employees because corporations are going to do what they have to do. They're going to hire less people. They're going to figure out a way around this kind of thing. If you care about poor people, you have to let freedom work. And this is, again, this is why I'm a conservative.
And on a macro sense, we know this, like economically, the boring way. We know that price controls, wage controls, all these kind of leftist solutions don't work, and that the market mechanism most helps people of all classes. But on a micro sense, I think it's even more important that from an aspect of human dignity, and because I care so much about what God said in Genesis 1 and us as image bearers of God, as co-creators with him, the idea that anybody's economic interest, let alone existential interest, is met by someone just giving to them, and that they just become a raw consumer instead of a producer. This is the big theme I'm on lately, is in both economics and the way we live our lives. And that's a huge part of what I talk about in the book. We have to think of ourselves as producers. We produce so that others consume, but others can only consume if they first produced. It's a virtuous cycle. Keynesian economics and leftist, atheist, humanist thinking, they both are vicious cycles, end poorly.
Well, and so again, this is the irony, is that if I care about the bottom line, I can't only care about the bottom line. I have to care about people. And if I care about people, I mean, but isn't this the way truth always works, right?
Yes.
Is that you get both, you know? It's kind of like saying, like, I'm going to treat my daughter like she's my daughter, not like she's my friend. But if I'm a good father who treats her like a daughter, she may become my friend.
Exactly.
But if I only want her to be my friend, I will end up being a bad father.
Yeah.
Because, it's just a funny thing. It's God is he's created a holistic universe. And so, again, if you care about the bottom line, by caring about your employees, by caring about your customers, by caring about the community in which you do business, by caring about all those things and having virtue at the center of things, you end up getting more money. At least that's the way it's supposed to work. We're going to go to a break here. Folks, talking to David Bahnsen. The book is Crisis of Responsibility. Stick around.
Images of broken light which dance before me like a million eyes. They call me on and on across the universe.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. President Trump is blasting his former lawyer, Michael Cohen, who's pleaded guilty to lying to Congress about his meeting involving a Russia real estate deal in 2016. President Trump accused Cohen of lying to win for himself a reduced sentence. Cohen had pleaded guilty to numerous charges back in August. Meanwhile, President Trump says he's pleased with the income being generated from tariffs on imported goods from China. The president is scheduled to meet with the Chinese President Xi on Saturday at the G20 Economic Summit in Argentina. Meanwhile, his on-again, off-again planned meeting with President Putin at that meeting is now off again. A grim warning for Northern California wildfire evacuees who are preparing to return to their homes in the aftermath of the state's worst ever wildfire. Officials warning they could find human remains or bones in the ashes of their homes and neighborhoods. On Wall Street right now, the Dow is up 62 points. This is SRN News.
I'm Nick Sobolewski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I shopped the many highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $27 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 800-452-6990. That's 800-452-6990. 800-452-6990. Or go to SelectQuote.com. Since 1985, we shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Hi, this is Rhett Rasmussen of BestHotGrill.com. Gift-giving occurs year-round, whether for birthdays, holidays, or a special expression of thanks to your best clients and customers. Of course you want to show your love and gratitude, but you also want to give a gift that provides a positive image of you and your organization. Solaire infrared grills from BestHotGrill.com are both practical and unforgettable. Made in the USA, Solaire has a grill for most budgets, but more importantly, Solaire delivers the wow that everybody likes to receive in a gift. Impressive out of the box, and even more so in use, the Solaire infrared grills are the gift of value that will build relationships. With every great tasting, juicy meal enjoyed from their Solaire, they'll think of you. Step up your gift giving. Learn more about the amazing Solaire infrared grills at besthotgrill.com. That's besthotgrill.com. Besthotgrill.com.
Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. We're talking about economics. My guest is David Bahnsen. David, am I mispronouncing your name every time? How do you say it?
You're saying it right every time, which is why I didn't correct. I've heard everything. Bahnsen, Bahanasen. I've even had some people say David Bahnsen of the Bahnsen Group. And I thought that was always kind of amazing.
That's, yeah,
I may be hedging by my company name and last name. But yeah. No, I always say it's like Johnson with a B.
All right.
But unfortunately, it's spelled differently.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I'm German, so I can see Bonn in that.
Yes.
But okay, we're talking about a lot of stuff. We were talking about Steve Bannon a minute ago with regard to free trade and China. In other words, yeah, when you are a protectionist in the true sense, in the bad sense, and you're saying that all we care is about American workers, you can hurt American workers. Explain that, though, because I don't understand. When we're talking about China, yeah, Trump is talking about them, you know, stealing billions of dollars from us every year. What does that have to do with American workers?
When he's talking about them stealing, I assume you mean the intellectual capital that they will take, because
No, I mean, that's another issue.
Well, remember, they don't steal by trading. They pay us.
Well, I guess he's talking about the deal that we have with them. In other
right.
words, what they charge us and what we charge them is not equitable.
And I have a hard time with that in this sense. Perhaps the tariffs that each side are charging are not good deals. But again, because I believe in free exchange, there are no businesses in America that are required to trade with businesses in China. They either look at the cost of doing that business, that tariff going in there is going to cost my company something, and they either decide to do it or not do it.
Uh-huh.
It is free exchange. There is no mandatory payment of a tariff.
Okay, so then what is Trump trying to do?
Now, let's
to get in his head and say, what is he thinking? What do you think he's thinking?
I honestly, this is the only area where I'm really critical of the president, so I ought to be careful because I'm not one of these.
Well, this is not a pro-Trump show.
No, I know.
This is we're trying to be fair and trying to understand.
I don't think
things.
He understands the dynamics of trade. I believe he is a New York real estate developer who views things as zero sum. That if I'm winning, someone else is losing, and if I'm losing, someone else is winning, and does not necessarily appreciate the dynamic of an expanding wealth pie that I believe is at play here as a classical economics guy who believes in what Adam Smith wrote about and so many centuries ago. Fundamentally, he talks about trade deficit as if we're losing something. And you asked me, so I get to give the answer, but I'll tell you, I hate the idea of giving complicated things on kind of a quick schedule. But here's the thing. We run trade deficits with people every day in our life. I have never traded anything with the gal that cuts my hair here at 56 and Lex. I pay her money and she cuts my hair. I run a big trade deficit. I'm trading nothing in return. I'm just paying. China, they do not buy from us as much as we buy from them. So there's a big trade deficit, but they pay us. But here's the we pay them.
We pay them. We get a haircut.
And then,
so why are we complaining?
Then they take the dollars we give them
yeah.
that they cannot spend in their country because they don't use U.S. dollar. And they have to then put it back into our country in the form of investment. So we have this massive savings deficiency in our own country. We don't save as a country. And we have huge investment need. We're a very complicated and sophisticated society, 320 million people. So we fund our investment from global capital. And so this has just sort of been this little I scratch your back, you scratch mine thing. They need to make our goods. They have a huge population to put to work. And then they make all their money as a society by exporting goods to our country. And this is the flow of capital that takes place. President Trump believes that the trade deficit in and of itself is an inequity. And
now, does Larry Kudlow not get an opportunity to explain this to him?
I believe he's explained it to him for many years, both before he worked for him and now while working for him. And I think where they found common ground is around this issue of intellectual capital, that the Chinese are often stealing our IP. American businesses are having things made there.
Well, that's a big deal.
And it is
and
a
that's
very
a moral
deal.
Issue.
It's a moral issue. It's an economic issue.
What can we do about that? Is Trump addressing that?
He's trying to, and he wants to package it in a big negotiation, and he's either going to end up being successful here or he's not. I'm fearful because I think we're playing with really serious stuff, but I'm all for there being a significant consequence to those who would steal intellectual capital. But I do get a little bit caught up on the fact that the businesses that are having their IP stolen are businesses letting it be stolen.
They're not being very bright.
They're not being very bright, no. And so I believe that that is the trillion-dollar question. I wouldn't say million-dollar question to stay faithful with the cliche, but it's a multi-trillion-dollar question. It is ultimately what President Trump's going for here, slightly better trade terms and a reform of this theft of intellectual property, or is he ultimately just trying to suppress the volume of trade that gets done? And if you believe in free exchange, I want more trade, not less. More trade of any parties, because I don't think parties are trading unless they believe it to be in their mutual self-interest.
Got it. Right. That's an interesting point, the idea that nobody's forcing American companies to do this. That is an interesting concept. Okay, when we come back, I want to talk to you about what is a trade war. We'll be right back, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show, talking to David Bahnsen. The book is Crisis of Responsibility. Hey, Albin.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
Okay.
Hey, listen,
good.
I want to tell you about Relief
Please
Factor.
Do.
We get these testimonials in at relieffactor.com. Jenny from Texas writes, I've been taking Relief Factor for 4 weeks. I was hit by a car. It almost sounds like because she was taking Relief Factor. No, that's not true. She was hit by a car while walking almost a year ago. And she got to the place, it's amazing, where nothing she tried for pain relief was working. My husband had heard of your product, she says. We decided to give it a try. This past week, I've started noticing a decrease in the pain in my lower back and an increased range of motion. Hooray.
Cool.
I'm pretty sure Relief Factor had something to do with it. I'm grateful Relief Factor has helped when everything else I tried quit working. Beautiful addition to my natural therapies. Folks, you hear this over and over again. People have accidents. People have all these different things. Your life changes. Try Relief Factor. It works for me. I have aches and pains from running and stuff. ReliefFactor.com is the website. Quick Start Pack, $19.95. You'll know whether it works for you. If it works for you, it could change your life. I would check it out. I do check it out. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com.
The way you get your medicine prescriptions is now changing across America. GoGoMeds.com can deliver your medicine right to your door. Here's all you need to do. Your doctor gives you the prescription. You go online to gogomeds.com, put in your information, and make sure to include the promo code MIKE2018 to save $10 off your first prescription. Your meds are then delivered to your home, and you've saved money. It's that easy. No more waiting, no lines, no copay each month, and best of all, no wandering around the store aimlessly waiting for your prescription to be filled. GoGoMeds.com, the new way to get your medicine delivered right to your door. Remember that getting your prescription filled now means never having to go to a store again. GoGoMeds.com. GoGoMeds.com. Use the promo code MIKE2018 to save $10 off your first prescription. That's GoGoMeds.com. Promo code MIKE2018.
Freedom. One nation in all of human history was built on that bedrock. Ours. A republic of the people, by the people, and for the people. Self-government requires freedom, just as freedom requires an individual willingness to self-govern. Freedom has made America exceptional, but it can only last as long as you and I seek the good, as expressed by the laws of nature and nature's God. It can only last if you and I choose to act as people of character. Forging character has been the pursuit of Hillsdale College since 1844. Hillsdale College forges character and elevates civic discourse both on campus and nationwide. To find out how you can take their free online courses or receive a complimentary subscription to Imprimis, a monthly speech digest, visit hillsdalefreedom.com. That's hillsdalefreedom.com.
Are you a timeshare owner that would like to get out of your timeshare the right way? Hi, I'm Karen, owner of Lone Star Transfer. Getting out of your timeshare is probably at the top of your to-do list for 2018. Now is the time to make the call to simplify your life. We have an excellent track record and an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. So if you want to get rid of those high maintenance fees and annual bills for vacations you never take, call 844-284-4863 or visit us online at lonestartransfer.com. Tom. That's 844-284-4863. For over a decade, we have been working in timeshare owner advocacy to help those stuck in timeshares. Let us help you with a legal and ethical solution. Call us today for a private, no-obligation consultation. We will give you a solution that will get you out of your timeshare once and for all. Call 844-284-4863 or LoneStarTransfer.com. Satisfaction guaranteed.
Yesterday, I was up before the dawn, and I really have enjoyed my stay, but I must be moving on, like a king without a castle, like a queen without a throne. I'm an early morning lover, and I must be moving on.
Hey folks, it's the Eric Metaxas Show. We're talking about free trade. I think whenever you hear Supertramp, you know we're going to go to free trade. Hey, we're talking to David Bahnsen. David, when we talk about a trade war, this fear of a trade war, one of the things that drives me crazy about TV news, they never seem to explain this. They sort of assume everybody knows what that is. I really don't understand. What is that? The fear of a trade war? What is a trade war? How could Trump's brinksmanship, economic brinksmanship with China lead to a trade war? What do we mean?
So the first shot across the bow is we impose tariffs on things that they are going to export into our country or things we're going to import from them. So who pays the tariff? The only person he can charge is the company receiving, right? So it's a tax on Americans that are paying it. But his argument is that it's done to curtail Chinese behavior or to get a better arrangement with China. But it is a direct tax on some American actor. I would argue the producer first and the consumer second.
Okay, but let me just say. So the point of doing that theoretically would be to make it harder for people to do business with China and easier for them to do business with America.
That's one of the objectives.
I mean, isn't that
have.
The main objective?
I think that would actually be – I think his objective is more to get the tariffs on the China side lower. That was the case with Europe. He wanted lower tariffs, you know, reciprocally.
So that to the Chinese would do more business with us?
I really hope that he is not doing it to say that a lot of these jobs will come back to America, because that's not going to work. A lot of the jobs we're talking about, if they did come back to America, it would be a computer, roboted, digitized, automated factory and so forth. I mean, our technology's advanced so much in the last 25, 30 years. I don't think it will be the big boon to labor that they're hoping for. I'm quite confident of that. But no, there's a number of policy objectives you could have by implementing the tariff. But the fact of the matter is, we talk about it like it's punitive. We're going to punish China for certain bad things they're doing. And my argument against it is that we're punishing American actors, whether it be consumers or producers or employees at different companies, things of that nature.
Okay, but what is the goal? In other words, if Trump says, let's put a tariff on China, what does he think we're going to get out of China? What's that going to force them to do?
And so this is where the talk of trade war comes in, is it gets to the kind of back and forth of it. We implement a tariff, so they say, okay, well, then we're going to implement a tariff back. And you hear a lot when people throw out Smoot-Hawley, which is kind of their rhetoric around what happened at the Great Depression, is we started putting tariffs, so other countries put it on. It was the Smoot-Hawley, which are congressmen that passed this bill. And all of a sudden, everybody's tariffing each other, trade dramatically suppressed, and it really added and extenuated the Great Depression. In this case,
okay,
we're still kind of holding an early inning of it. It hasn't escalated to that level. Both sides are feeling each other out. I think he did the right thing with Mexico and Canada by getting that out of the way so he can now deal with China. China had more leverage if he was still having to negotiate with China and Mexico. With Canada and Mexico. So now he's kind of cleared the way for a one-on-one negotiation with China. And I think that markets are petrified of going short and betting against the U.S. economy, because if he gets a deal with China, we could be rip-roaring even higher. And I also think people are afraid he won't get that.
Now, when you say if he gets a deal with China, what kind of a deal are we talking about?
I really believe that he wants a deal that will play to his base politically, nothing wrong with that, that will be able to modestly point to some benefit on American side of the negotiation, lower tariffs on our side or higher on their side, hopefully lower all the way around, lower trade barriers, period.
Okay.
But then I think that this intellectual capital issue we talked about before, if he can demonstrate that he was able to substantively do something that neither President Obama or President Bush were able to do, which is limit or if not eliminate this massive theft of intellectual property from Chinese businesses, I think that'll be a very big deal.
Well, that's interesting. Now, I know you and David French, who wrote the foreword to your book, and so many of my friends at National Review were very strongly against Trump in 2016. As I hear you talk now, I'm kind of wondering, would you think that he's not as bad as you feared? Or where do you come out on that?
Yeah, I mean, again, my issue, we've never talked about this. My opposition to Trump during 2016 was along the exact same lines you were for him, right? You were afraid of Hillary. And I believe the only way we were going to get Hillary is if we nominated Trump. And I was wrong. So I never doubted the binary thinking that Trump would be better than Hillary.
I'm saying after the primaries.
Right. And so
because I wasn't really big for him before the.
Yeah. After the primaries, I wrote the exact same thing. It was an article I poured my soul out. I just said, look, he's going to lose to Hillary. I live in California where my vote doesn't matter, so I'm not going to vote for him. But if I lived in Ohio or Florida, I'd be down there voting for Trump.
Okay. And but a lot of our friends at National Review.
Some of our friends were not.
Still. Yeah. See, I guess I get so really mystified because I think, what am I missing?
Yeah.
It struck me, and it strikes me still now, that if Hillary had been elected by default, just because people say, I refuse to vote for Trump, he annoys me, that it would have been absolutely disastrous on an existential level, that we would have lost the ability to have constitutional judges. We would have lost the kinds of things you can't get back.
I think that it's hard to speak for everyone at National Review because there's such a huge diversity of opinion on this very issue there. They're all dear, dear friends of mine. David French is one of my close friends. His position's a little different than Rich Lowry. It might be different than Jonah Goldberg. Victor Davis Hanson is extremely defensive, supportive of President Trump. Andy McCarthy has done incredible work defending Trump around a lot of this Mueller nonsense. So there's different opinions there. But let me tell you mine, Eric. I actually support his agenda so much that where I'm critical, it's because of him getting in his own way. That's where I'm critical. And I'm critical of those who defend him no matter what. So in other words, my view is this. Hillary Clinton would have put horrible judges on, and President Trump has put two really good judges on the Supreme Court and 22 really good judges federal court. And I believe that, and I'm going to keep saying it. That doesn't mean I'm going to defend paying off a porn star. I don't think I
right.
have to do both things.
I can maintain that moral integrity. I would certainly agree with you there.
Yeah.
We're going to go to a break. We'll continue this on the other side of the break. Folks, it's the Eric Metaxas Show. Our website is MetaxasTalk.com. If you go to MetaxasTalk.com before midnight tonight, you may get a free pack of unfiltered cigarettes. Check it out.
Hey there, it's Eric Metaxas for Policy Genius. Here's an unfun fact. Over half of bankruptcies and mortgage foreclosures are caused by medical issues. That's because if you get sick or injured over the course of your career, your employer's sick leave often only covers you for up to 3 months. And while health insurance helps with medical bills, it doesn't replace lost income. That is where disability insurance comes in. It's essentially income insurance. It protects your paycheck if you're sidelined by an illness or injury. Policy Genius does all the shopping for you. They compare quotes from the top disability insurance companies to find the best price. Then their licensed experts manage the application process to save you time and hassle. Policy Genius has helped over 4 million people shop for insurance and placed over $20 billion in coverage. So if you rely on your income to get by, compare disability insurance quotes with PolicyGenius.com. We'll help you protect your paycheck at a price that makes sense. You can get started online right now. Policy Genius. It's the easy way to compare and buy disability insurance.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. President Trump has called off a planned sit-down with Russian President Vladimir Putin this weekend at the G20 summit. South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham says Russia is learning there are consequences to violating international norms.
I want Putin to understand that if you trample over international norms, you're finally going to pay a price. I think this is the right signal at the right time.
But
Prior to the president's final decision, military analyst Colonel Robert McGinnis expressed a belief that there would be merit for the two leaders to talk, despite some disagreements.
I think it's critical that world leaders do discuss these issues. Better to discuss than to take other provocative actions.
On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average struggled for most of the session, but it has reversed course just a few minutes from the closing bell now. The Dow is up by about 17 points. The NASDAQ is down by 9. This is SRN News.
Hi, we're here with Alexander Green, four-time best-selling author and chief investment strategist of the Oxford Club. Alex is a stock-picking legend. He calls six of the best stocks of the past 20 years, including Apple, Intuitive Surgical, Netflix, Verion, Amazon, and Celgene. Now, Alex, I understand you're targeting a new stock.
Yes, it's a cutting-edge tech company making blockbuster deals. I'm talking about $450 million with Nokia, $395 million with Microsoft, and a $29.2 billion deal with Apple. The company is set to create 50,000 new jobs right here in America, and Donald Trump himself even calls what they're doing the eighth wonder of the world. Yet you've likely never even heard of it because this $3 stock trades under a secret name.
Alex just got on stage in front of a packed crowd to talk about this secret stock, and you can see his free presentation at onestockretirement.com. Don't wait on this. We expect the stock to make big national news on December 17th. Go to onestockretirement.com now.
Hey, folks, it's the Eric Metaxas Show. A few minutes left with David Bahnsen. We're talking about everything. David, we were just talking off the air about Trump and how a lot of our friends, they were never Trumpers, and some of them are still very, very critical of him and really angry. And I confess, honestly, I don't understand, because I think to myself, look, at the end of the day, you have to choose someone. If you don't, by default, the other person wins. And if Hillary Clinton had won, I argue, I mean, if you want to talk about character, for example, I think at the heart of character, we can get hung up on, oh, it's about sexuality or it's about this or that. That character means a lot of things. I think at the core, what the founders meant when they're talking about men of virtue has to do with, will you put yourself above the republic? In other words, if I can line my pockets, if I can do something dirty with my power, that's the essence of a lack of character. So corruption. And to my mind, the Clintons are as guilty that as anyone has ever been in public life. Yep. Therefore, on character, I had to vote for Trump because I was convinced, and I am convinced now, he loves this country. Yep.
So I manage money for a living, as we talked about. I run a wealth management group where I'm responsible to steward client capital. And I have to talk to my clients about two things, and I'm going exactly to where you were. I have to talk about our absolute performance. Hey, you were up 6% this year. You were up 8% this year. And then I have to talk about relative performance. Look, the market's very distressed. The market may have been down 2%. We were actually only flat. You don't want to be flat. But compared to down 2%, we did pretty well. Both things are legitimate conversations and legitimate ways of looking at a client portfolio.
Right.
I think that you have to look at character in the context you're talking about. It's a relative analysis. The character of one candidate, in this case, it was President Trump and his various controversies around the grifter that was Hillary Clinton. And just as much as I was distressed by some of my friends on the right that weren't as forthcoming about Trump's character, I was blown away at how many on the left were not willing to say, look, maybe we just want a pro-choice person or we just want whatever. But gosh, this one has really taken the American people for a ride. President Trump actually said, treated it like the Clinton Foundation, like her own little hedge fund, which is what they did. That's a relative analysis.
Right.
On an absolute basis, I think it's acceptable for for some of us to be distressed about some of the more, you know, the ways in which President Trump has written about his own sexual past. It's distressing. And I worry about our credibility and our voice as people who were rightly disgusted by some of these behaviors from President Clinton.
But sometimes you get boxed in. You have no choice. Either you vote for Hillary or you vote for Trump.
And
the
so
idea
in
that you can vote for nobody.
Disagree.
But this is what I'm saying. It was the idea that, I mean, see, to me, it's a kind of Pharisaism. And that maybe is putting it too strongly. But the point is to say that by all, I have to be pure, okay? And the church in Germany, okay, there were people who said, I'm so serious about being holy as a Christian that if the Gestapo comes to my door and says, yeah, are you hiding a Jew in the basement? I cannot lie. I must not lie. Yeah. God will take care of the Jew, but I say to the Gestapo, the Jew's in the basement, go get him. That, to my mind, is bad theology.
Well, it is bad theology. It's much worse than Phariseeism. It was just wrong from start to finish. They had all of their ethical standards backwards. But I think that what I would add to, I'm not changing or altering or disagreeing with your viewpoint. I'm saying once we've established that Hillary Clinton has lost, and that's a good thing, and now President Trump's there, my desire, I've seen people, including folks who've been guests on your show, talk to him privately and say, you can't do that.
Right.
And he has listened.
Right.
But when he believes that the whole country is enabling, or everyone
yeah,
on the
yeah,
right
yeah.
is enabling,
right.
it creates a cycle that I don't like.
I love that. We're out of time. David Bahnsen, thank you so much.